Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the gyps of the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th day of June, Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Van Wright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Oh, I should tell you, Steve Ray, not here, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest, hiding among the mesas and the cacti.
Whatever, we lost track of him.
We've lost track of him completely, hopefully.
He turned his GPS tracking off.
That's right. And he's on the lam, as we used to say. But I will read the news. Apple's annual WWDC, Worldwide Developers Conference, is synonymous with software, really. Excuse me. Specifically, updates to the platforms that power iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple Watch, home security cameras, and more. Think of it as a sneak peek at the new tools your device will be able to use and things it'll be able to do, and as a summer build up to the fall event when Apple is expected to unveil the iPhone 13 and more. So the spring event is for developers, mm-hmm. and it's about software. The fall event is for users, and it's about hardware. Apple revealed upgrades to many of its operating systems, most notably iOS 15. Apple also introduced macOS Monterey, previously known as macOS 12, along with watchOS 8 and iPadOS 15. The rumored Home OS, however, did not make an appearance. Developer betas of all Apple OS upgrades are available as of today, but the general public will have to wait for public betas to start in July, with wide releases coming sometime this fall. In Apple's big keynote address, CEO Tim Cook, or if you prefer Tim Apple, also unveiled some new tricks for existing products such as FaceTime, iMessage, and Apple Maps, a slew of new health features, updates to Siri and AirPods, and the new iCloud Plus service with enhanced privacy controls and enhanced cost. Apple also talked up new features to its App Store, saying it'll create a new in-app events feature that will be on the App Store homepage. Apple said in-app events will also be built into the App Store search, a new App Store widget for iPhones and iPads, and on the product page for an app in the store. Safari has always been a second banana to Google's Chrome and Mozilla's Firefox, more like an eighth or ninth banana, even if Apple claims it's faster and has better battery life. In macOS Monterey, Apple said it's reworking Safari to make it sleeker to look at and adding more sync features between devices. Tab synchronization between devices, Apple said. Apple made FaceTime available as a web app, but it may be too late. Lots of people use Duo already and won't see much value in changing. And it still doesn't work on Android phones. Apple's adding a new service offering to its lineup, this time focusing on privacy. The new iCloud Plus is designed to help obscure your information from the web. For example, now it'll create obscured email addresses for you to help keep companies from spamming you. I'm not entirely sure how that works, so don't ask me, but they say they can do it. And it's creating a relay system which hides your information as you surf the web. I suppose they could do it by creating a temporary address, but how long will that... it doesn't matter. Apple said when you use its relay system, it'll send internet traffic through two relay systems, obscuring your information even from Apple. Apple said these features will be built into iCloud for the same price as it charges now. So for many people, it's already built in when it launches, likely later this year. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is what excited you most at Apple's WWDC 2021? And the choices are new operating system, updated messaging, privacy tools, Siri everywhere, nothing excited me, and of course, other. So far, we have, well, that's slow. We have 27 votes. Nothing excited me as far in the lead with over 80% of the votes, followed by new operating systems, other, and privacy tools. So far, nobody cares about updated messaging or Siri everywhere. But of course, once you voted in the poll, that's at our website, soundbites.org, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Once you voted, you can head on over to our forum. So if you go to soundbites.org, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 12 June 21, Apple's WWDC 2021. And you can leave your comments. Keep them clean. Leave your comments there. And there, you know, there were a lot of announcements, and Apple people should be fairly excited. Like I said earlier, I have no idea. I have no personal use for an Apple device, but I know a lot of people do, and I know that we support them. So,
but the thing that is, though, whether it's Apple or PC side, it's getting to the point like, yeah, okay, another phone.
Well, right.
There's nothing that, oh, the people are standing at midnight waiting to own and, you know, have the very first one. To be the first one on their block, they got to have it. They're, you know, just obsessed with it like they were. Now, so they add another feature here, another feature there. Like I say, the only thing that's going to do, whether it's iPhone, Android, or whatever, which I've contended for over a year and a half now, is they got to change the battery life.
Yeah.
Getting thinner is, oh, maybe real cool, but hey, you get a real thin phone, and then you put this huge gator box on it to protect it.
Right.
Now you got this big, bulky thing. So what's the difference if they add a few more millimeters thicker and give you more battery life? Because they're talking about, you know, being able to stream on the internet and watch movies and do this and do that. That all takes battery life, folks. And if they're not changing that, where are you going? You're all dressed up and no place to go.
That's right. It's interesting to watch. It's interesting to watch people playing with their phones. Some people are utterly fearless. They're on their phone constantly. And others hoard that battery life like it's
gold.
And yeah, it's actually pretty funny. To see the difference between people. And of course, you know, I've asked people, how often you recharge your phone? Oh, I've always got it on the charger in the car. I've always, you know, I've got one of these clamp on battery things that I could. Okay, now you've just made your entire phone another inch thick.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it make more sense to just make it a few more millimeters thick and add more? Okay, whatever.
Yeah. And the thing of it is, though, I don't care if you take the time and say you're a passenger in a vehicle and you're driving around. Just watch all the people along that are, you know, walking on the streets or hanging out on the corners, you know, or just waiting, say, for a bus or that. 99% of them, you will see their face down buried into their phone.
Yep.
Or they've got the ear pods on and they're listening to something on the phone, watching the screen. That's just the way the society is nowadays. You can go into restaurants. Instead of families talking together, they're all buried into their phone.
Yep.
You know, typing away. How sad is that?
I went to a movie last night with my daughter.
Did they talk in it?
They were in color. They were in color.
Really?
The movies were in color. I was shocked. I mean, I'd heard talkies.
I heard you know, that you were talking in them now.
You ain't heard nothing yet, folks, and I get all that. These were in color. I was shocked. There was no newsreel. I don't know what that was about. How do they not have...
What? No reels?
No newsreels.
When they stopped that?
No cartoon. I was depressed about that, I'll be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the movie was in color, so you can't argue with that. Anyway, we went to the movies yesterday, and there was a guy... It was sparse seating, right, for COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a few people sitting to our left and down a couple. So one guy was just on his phone. Somebody reached over and slapped him on the back of the head. Said, put that blanket phone away. Off it went.
Yeah.
Gone.
Some folks can be so inconsiderate. Unbelievable.
Yeah. If you don't want to go to a movie... Don't go to a movie, but don't go to the movie and then do all that other stuff.
And save the money.
Save the money.
The money you're saving, you know, just, you can do that outside.
Yep.
Wait for the person, you know, drop them off, come, wait out in your car, do all your texting and phoning, and wait for them to come out. You just saved, you know, probably $20.
This was the first movie I've been to in easily a year and a half, maybe a year and a quarter anyway. And holy moly, it was when my daughter took me. I didn't even pay for any of it.
Whoa.
My daughter took me as an early Father's Day gift.
She Congratulations.
She called me up and said, you want to go see the opening night of The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard? I said, yes, I do. Because it wouldn't matter what the movie was. My daughter wanted to go with me. I would go.
You're going.
Although I wanted to see that. I really like all the people who are in it. So she said, okay, it's my early Father's Day treat.
Cool.
Okay. Right. We're going to argue for that.
Yeah, I'll twist my arm.
It was great. I mean, like I said, I love movies, and I haven't been to one in well over a year. So
it's been a couple years for me.
Yeah, it was great. Holy moly, it was great. This is the first movie I've been to since I got my hearing aids. Mm-hmm. I heard everything.
What a concept.
Yeah. It was not only are they talking, but they're legend. They're understandable.
You can understand it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really nice. Anyway, folks, give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And you know, you're right, Dave. The problem with all of this stuff now is that it's all evolutionary, not revolutionary.
Yeah.
You know, it's small increments. And the problem is the increments are getting smaller because these things are so good to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, the technology has changed so much. They're very durable. I mean, the abuse that some of these devices can take now because the electronics are so much better.
Right.
You know, before, if you had something, you dropped it, it's like, oh, forget it. You know, the screen would shatter and everything else. Well, with the new plastic, you know, the new glass covers and everything else, it's and the cases on them. I mean, people are dropping them and everything else, and they're fine.
Yep.
You know, the technology has gotten really good as far as that part. Where they plan the obsolescence in, I found out, is literally in the battery.
Yeah.
Because you think about it, folks. Back when phones first came out, you could used to get one and you'd get an extra battery and have that always in the charger. So that once you got home, all right, yeah, it's getting a little low, you just take that one out and you put the one that's in the charger, slap it in the back. Well, they've done away with that for a reason. Because they know, you know, you could keep doing that for a long time and they'd lose out as far as making any money. So what they've done, and beknownst to you, is they've, for your convenience, they make the battery in there so you don't have to fiddle around with that.
Yep.
Well, yeah, that's true. But also, that battery only has so many recharges available to it in its lifetime.
Right.
And you will notice after you have the phone, say, and I've ran into this on my last Pixel phone. The phone was still running fine. The only problem I had was the battery. Otherwise, it made calls and everything else when it was fully charged. But after time, you know, you get it for, say, 4 or 5 years, and you keep charging it, all of a sudden that battery won't hold the charge as long. And I would be charging my phone in the morning, start at 100%. Before noon, I was down to 40%, and I hadn't really made any phone calls. because the battery is just depleting. And, oh, well, what am I going to do? You know, leave it on the charger all the time. I can't do that because I don't have a long enough extension cord.
Right.
Follow me around the house and everything else. So, you know, they've done it that way. So now you're forced to go get the next phone.
Right.
And it's just plan obsolescence.
That's why I'm very happy with the, I'm trying a thing now. I'm very happy with it so far. It's annoying, which is exactly what it's supposed to be. It's a program called Battery Saver.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually called Battery Charge Notifier. And what it does is there is a theory, and it is a true theory, that is to say it's backed by science, that charging your phone, don't let your phone get less than 40% or more than 80% the battery. And if you keep it between those, it stresses it much less.
Mm.
And that means that you get a longer battery life. Well, how do you do that? You spend all day looking at your phone waiting for it to 40%. The battery charge notifier gives you a notification when your battery hits 40%, and then another notification when it's charged to 80%. So, you know, sometimes I go to 39, 38 before I get to a charger. Sometimes I leave it there to 81, 82. But in general, I hit between 40 and 80, and we'll see over time if my battery lasts longer.
Good idea.
And it's a free app. It's called Battery Charge Notifier for Android. I don't know if there's one for Apple. But so far, you know, charging it every day or two from 40 to 80 is not difficult, particularly since I spend so much of my time at home anyway, although that's hopefully going to be changing shortly. But it makes it easy. It makes it convenient. And theoretically, it's not stressing my battery as much.
Speaking of that's what I think I've got to get a new charger for my wrist. My watch.
Oh, yeah.
Because I put it on the charger. I sit there and tap it just so it makes the contacts along. And I went to grab it this morning. Dead. Won't even come on.
So with mine, the problem with these is those three little
contacts?
Four or five little connectors on the back. They one of them, the fourth one from the second one from the right, fourth one from the left, rubs off, and particularly if your hand sweats.
Yeah.
And so if your wrist sweats. And so I've tried to be more careful of that. When I take it off, I wipe it dry and et cetera. But I have the same issue. It now only sits in one particular spot.
Well, see, I made a little stand for mine, so it's up, so the straps can hold over the side. It was a simple little, you know, piece of wood with a dowel.
Sure.
And I glued a little pedestal so I could Velcro the charger on top of it. So I can just set it on there. I tap it. So it, like you say, makes the contacts there in the corner. And for the most part, it's getting to be a pain in the butt. So I don't know if it's the charger or the phone. Or
try taking it off that stand, because it might be that, like with mine, there's only one position where it will charge now. Mm. And that the weight of gravity...
Oh.
Maybe pulling it off of that. So if you lay it flat, you might.
Well, this is level.
Oh, it's.
Yeah. And both ends of the strap, so there's no stress, though. It's not leaning one way or the other.
Right, right.
It literally is off the ground about this much. And I just set it on and tap it. So, you know, it makes the contact. But I'm having more and more issues with it.
Try sliding it to one side, with the things on it, where the stem would be in a normal watch. Slide it more toward that side, because that's what
I was going to try. Maybe a little contact spray on those too.
Cleaning them off is probably a really good idea.
Get some contact spray and just, you know, put it on a Q-tip and wipe those all off.
Both.
Yeah. Because I don't think it's making the good contact.
You know, we could be answering your questions too out there, folks. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Oh, I was watching another video. This one guy, I swear, he's over in England, and he's constantly doing updates and reviews on the Pi 4.
Sure.
He's got a 400, so you better not watch him. He's always playing with a Pi 4. He's got this tower where literally it's a cool-looking tower where he's got his Raspberry Pi in there, and then he's got this heat sink. That sucker has to be about 5 inches tall.
Yeah.
Sitting on top of this Pi 4 to keep it cool. He says, but the great thing about it is, doesn't make any noise.
Right.
So there's no interference in that. So he was just trying a new fan that just came out, and it's super quiet, but it's a lot bigger. And evidently it does a lot better job of keeping things cooler and working better.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, the Raspberry Pi 4 does get a little warm. So having active cooling is better than passive cooling, unless, of course, your passive cooling heatsink is 5 inches tall. I suppose that's going to do it for you. But in general, you really should, if you're going to have a Raspberry Pi, you should have active cooling for it.
Yeah,
all
you
right.
Gotta.
Let's get to the phones. Our first caller is our friend Al from Rochester, New York. Hi, Al. What's up?
Hey, guys. Not too much. It's a beautiful day in Rochester. So
is there?
Yeah.
Something to rejoice. So your conversation about batteries dying and contacts not contacting, et cetera, mm-hmm. was perfect. So I've got a sort of a question for you. I think I know the answer, unfortunately, but I figured I'd tap into greater wisdom.
you called here?
Yeah, it's the wrong number, my friend.
Well, I'm sorry. I picked a week.
He said a funny.
So I'm tired, and I probably missed on that.
So what's up?
So this is a USB-C problem.
Okay.
I have a Pixel, and it's getting fussy about what cable I put into it to make a good contact. And then on top of that, my wife has a Chromebook, which has been a delight in terms of being maintenance-free for my end. But it came with two C ports and nothing else.
Right.
One of the C ports has died, and now we're down to one. So my general question is, Dave, you probably have more hands-on with this. Is there any hope for resurrecting a flaky C-port, like dirt being cleaned out, or am I just going to have to live with it until it dies and then we go buy new stuff?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes, because that stuff is all surface-mounted.
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt to blow it out.
Yeah, no.
I mean, that can't hurt it.
Matter of fact, well, you're pretty confident anyway, so what I would say is if you were to, turn the thing off, if you want to try hitting it with a little contact spray, unplug it, of course, electrical contact spray.
Okay.
Just clean it out. Or if you
the plug itself as well.
Yeah. You could always also, which I would recommend even more so, is if you can get a Q-tip and sort of trim it down a little bit so there's only a little fuzz on it, and or even get a tissue, wrap it around, say, a paper clip or something or a toothpick, and spray it with some contact spray and run it around the connector inside there.
Okay.
Very carefully. Don't, go jamming it in there because you might break the surface mount. But just poking it in there, and just in case some dirt got lodged in there, that it's not seating correctly.
Okay. I mean, obviously the phone, it's in my pocket. It's got dust and
bugs and everything. You can also try blowing it out, a little compressed air.
Okay. And the contact solution isn't going to dissolve the circuit board or anything?
No, that's the whole thing. It's got to be electrical contact spray. And electrical contact spray, you can spray right on electrical components.
That's what it's for.
Yeah. It's to clean it. So they do that quite often on circuit boards and everything else. So if it's got a lot of flux and all that type of stuff on it, we used to take the spray and spray it on down, and it won't hurt any of the components.
Okay.
But it has to be electrical contact spray. And normally I would have told you to go to, like, Goldcrest He used to have it.
Sure.
He's gone now.
Oh, no. Oops. I was going to say, Radio Shack's no longer a resource, so Goldcrest would have been my next stop.
Yeah.
They're gone.
Yeah, no. What you got to do is, like everybody else, go to Amazon. Order it online.
Yep.
Okay.
While you're there, they also have, and this is one of the issues with all of these devices, is that those surface mounts are not, they're just surface mounts.
Yeah.
And as you know, that's fragile. So the constant plugging and unplugging is an issue. One of the things that I've done is I bought a bunch of USB-C magnetic connectors. So that little connector lives in the C port constantly. So I put it in once, never touch it again. Then, just like the old MagSafe connectors for Apple, it just connects, it just snaps on magnetically.
Yep. Yeah.
And taking it off is a matter of popping that thing, or if I accidentally move the PC without remembering it was plugged in, or the phone or my tablet.
The phone, it just
quickly. It just pops.
Yeah, it disconnects.
Yep.
And without tearing the circuitry
inside
the device.
Right.
Well, excellent advice. And actually, I did exactly that for my wife's Chromebook.
Once
the port died and I realized I was down to the one and only connection to the world, I went online and found an Anchor, a little port hub. And I recommend their quality.
Yeah.
But it's the only solution is so she doesn't keep plugging and unplugging.
Right.
Okay,
we got to go.
Take care.
Thanks. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 31 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will be right back.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 38 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We did have a text question, which was essentially, how does the Raspberry Pi 400
cool itself?
And the Raspberry Pi 400, as you know, is an all-in-one thing. It's a keyboard and all the other stuff. It is passive cooling, but it has rather than a heat sink, it's what's called a heat spreader. And what it does is it dissipates that heat across the entire unit, the front, the back, everywhere, so that no part of it feels too hot to the touch. And in fact, there is enough thermal margin, they say, that you could even overclock it if you were so inclined.
Yeah, because it is unlike the regular Raspberry Pi, where you've got it within, you know, this small confined space and a lot of stuff is surface mount. This is a keyboard. So they've got more surface area underneath that keyboard to spread the components out and dissipate the heat.
Right. And because on the regular Raspberry Pi, the whole thing is in the size of a deck of cards.
Bar of soap.
Bar of soap, except much thinner, of course, but the size of a bar of soap. Those components are close enough together that the heat generated by any one piece also affects nearby pieces, whereas with the Raspberry Pi 400, the board is actually spread out for the width of the keyboard, so things are much farther apart from each other. So there certainly is a concern if you were to seriously overclock it and run, I don't know what, but some sort of thing that stressed it to the maximum 24 hours a day, you certainly could, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, and there's
reach the thermal threshold.
Yeah, but for the most part, you know, I mean, folks are, you know, running games and everything else on it without having to overclock it.
Right. Also without having the heat dissipation problem.
Right. Because here's the thing, folks. What they've done, unlike Microsoft, the folks that have written the code and that to work on the Raspberry Pi and Windows have done a lot better job of managing stuff. So it's more efficient.
Right.
And as far as, you know, not having to overclock in that, they're rewriting the code so it runs a lot better, a lot smoother, and with a lot less of it taxing the whole system and causing it to overheat. Matter of fact, we were talking during the break here. There's one gentleman that does a lot of YouTube videos that you can search. He's over in England. And so the best way, I forget his name, but if you were to go to YouTube and do a search for Twister OS, and he does a logo. It's a blue logo, round circle. It looks like somebody, I believe, on a bicycle or that. But that's the gentleman. And he does videos constantly on both the Raspberry Pi 4, the 3, and the 400. And he's constantly updating different stuff. I just saw one video where he just did a video on a brand new heatsink fan that's super quiet. Very little noise, where some of them you can get and they sound like a jet engine. You know, they spin on up and it's like, yeah, I'd like to put that over in another room, to where he's got one that's a heatsink that's got to be about, what, 4 to 5 inches tall?
Right.
Yeah, it's about 4 or 5 inches tall, and it's, I'd say, 3 by 3 square, and it, you know, keeps the unit cool. Because it is, you know, such a small little device, and it one heck of a lot of power in it, especially nowadays that they've changed it, that you can now run it, instead of running it off the little SSD cards that, you know, you get a 32 gig or whatever, you can just hook it up to an SSD hard drive, say a 1 terabyte or 2 terabyte, and boot it off that. It makes it that much more efficient, less moving parts, less noise, and everything runs smooth.
I've been looking up over time, of course, and I just found one again. Somebody who did a side-by-side comparison. They overclocked the Raspberry Pi 400 to a little over 2 gigahertz.
Mm.
It's normally 1.8. Now it's 2.2, 2.1, somewhere in there. And then with passive cooling on it and a Raspberry Pi 4, and they ran the same set of programs on both and blah, blah, blah. And the Raspberry Pi 4 was consistently above 60 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
They don't throttle till about 84, so still 60 degrees Celsius. But the Raspberry Pi 400 with the same stuff,
yeah,
overclocked to 2.1 gigahertz,
yeah,
34 degrees Celsius. So the heat dissipation in the Raspberry Pi 4, clearly much, much, much better.
Yeah.
Than the 400 is much, much, much better than in the 4. So
yeah, because I think you don't have much to worry about. Like I said, the components are spread out farther than in this, just into this little cube, folks.
Right.
And especially, like most folks, when you get a Raspberry Pi, you know, you don't just have it sitting out. They've got cases for them.
Sure.
So that, you know, gets a little thicker. And
you can buy all kinds of cases for them. Cheese and crackers.
Oh, matter of fact, when we go out to the car, I'll show you mine.
Yeah.
Because I've got a what they call an MMDVM hat for it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's got a little antenna on it that talks out to the internet. And again, that adds more heat because you're blocking things in that. So that's why, you know, and this is only a Raspberry. The one I got right now is only a Raspberry Pi 3B. So it's not as fast, but I don't need it that fast. It's just doing simple stuff.
And the 4, you know, for $100 all in, you now have a complete desktop, essentially. It's a 4 gig desktop, and it runs great.
We did have somebody just text in and says, "Hey, Dave, could you post a list of Raspberry Pi components you suggest?" I'll tell you what, give me this week, and I will go through and I will get that gentleman's name and the list of different stuff in that, and we'll put it together. And by next week, I'll have Steve post that up there and get into it. Because as you folks know, we've been talking more and more about the Raspberry Pis because PC.
And when you say we, you mean you and me, not Steve.
But for the most part, folks, because it's something, you know, as you know, I mean, we're not telling you anything new or revelation here, is that PCs have more or less become to a standstill. Everybody's going to laptops or tablets, or they're doing a lot on their phones.
Phones and Chromebooks are the growing. Raspberry Pis are the growing markets right now.
You don't go into these even Best Buy or any of these other stores and see a lot of big towers. So, you know, if you got one and you want to still play around, the Raspberry Pi is the next way to go. If for a little box, you can have one heck of a lot of fun. Play around, and if you mess something up, it's not like, oh, shoot, I lost all the... No, just wipe it out, start over again, or back it up and make a you know, reburn the image.
Right.
Because once you have the image, you can save it off to the side and reburn
it. Basically, it's a Linux desktop.
Yeah.
And there are multiple versions of Linux you can run on it, and it runs great. And it'll do everything you want to do. That Raspberry Pi 400, you can run LibreOffice on it. Everything. Name it, and you can run it on that.
Twister, if you get the Twister version, that comes with LibreOffice already installed.
So does the other one. But that's okay.
Yeah, when you install it, it's already there down at the bottom of your desktop.
Yep.
LibreOffice, so you can sit there, and it's no different than Microsoft Office.
Right.
It's just a different flavor.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Brighton, New York. Thanks for waiting. Dave, what's up?
Yes, hi. Here's my issue. I have an iPhone 6. I've had it about 5 years. Works fine. The other day, and when I'm in my vehicle, I keep it in a cradle that's up on the dashboard, like for when I'm using Google Maps and that kind of thing. Suddenly, for the first time ever, it was about 85 degrees. I got a warning screen that said overheating.
Yep.
Cool down the unit. And what I can't figure out is why, after all this time and using that phone in all kinds of weather, I've had it on like almost all day in the summer on a long trip using Google Maps, why I'm getting this screen now. Is the phone trying to tell me something other than it's just too hot?
Well, it's likely. Now, again, I don't know the circumstances, but generally when we see this, it means you just got in a hot car, turned your phone on, and the air conditioning hasn't cooled the car down yet. When you've got it sitting on the dashboard and it's 85, 90, 95 out, you've also got the air conditioning on. And that cools the inside of the car down.
That could have been the problem, because I was driving, but I was waiting for someone sitting in a parking lot with the engine off.
Yep, yeah.
So I guess the phone was just overheating.
And see, the inners of the phone heat up and don't cool off as fast as your surrounding area.
Right.
Those are all components in there, and they take a little bit longer. Even if you turn the AC on, you know, and all of a sudden you start feeling the cold air, it's going to take a few minutes longer for that device to finally warm up.
And again, when cool you've got something that's so thin and the components are so crammed together, there's not a lot of airspace in between them.
None.
In addition, if you've got it in a cradle, you're now insulating it from the cooler outside air.
I see.
So, right. I mean, I have the same. I have a cradle for my phone mine is in one of those WeatherTech things that sits in the
cup holder.
Yeah.
Right.
I have a cup holder right in front of one of my vents.
So I
tend to put it in that one and let the cold air blow on it to keep it cool. But that's most likely your problem.
Right. Well, see, we run into the problem. The company I work for, we've got tablets in our vehicle. And we run into the problem both in the winter and in the summer because these tablets are in these cradles. So during the summer day, you know, we step out for lunch and say it's a 90-degree day. We come back into that van if we didn't crack the windows. These tablets are all of a sudden, the heat's beating down on them, and they heat right up, and they'll sit there and say, yeah, nope, it's overheated. It's just like during the winter months. It can get so cold. They've got to warm up first before they'll even function.
Okay, I guess that answered my question. But there is one other thing. This is more of an anecdote that ties in with what you one of you mentioned earlier about how many people walk down the street with their face buried in their phone. I had a situation. I don't know if anyone else has ever encountered this. I was driving down a side street, and I came to an intersection, and there was shrubbery on the corner, so you couldn't see around the other side of the intersection. And I was just about proceeding through when a teenage girl on a bicycle came around the corner looking at her phone. That is just, and she was just oblivious, you know. Fortunately, I spotted it. You know, there was, you know, there's no collision, but.
I was on the RIT campus driving along one of the back roads. There was this guy coming toward me on a bicycle in my lane coming toward me. Looking at his phone, I beeped, I flashed my lights. Luckily, I had enough time. I turned off my car and stepped out of it before he ran into me.
Amazing.
And then he looks up and he starts yelling at me and he realizes I'm outside the car. The car is turned off and my door is open. And he just picked up his now damaged bicycle and he was on my side of the road. He just picked up his damaged bicycle and walked off. I mean, what was he going to say at that point? But he didn't hear me beeping. He didn't see me flashing my light. I thought maybe, you know, I'm on the RIT campus, a lot of deaf students. Okay, I get that. So I started flashing my lights. That didn't do any good. And he could speak. He could hear clearly because we had a bit of a conversation. but so it wasn't that. He was just so engrossed in his phone.
That's becoming
that he ran into a car.
More and more of the problem. I had one, I was going up Hudson Avenue, coming up to this intersection, and I've got the right of way. And we slammed on the brakes because this car just came across the cross street to get on the intersection, and we both me and the person next to me looked as we slammed on our brakes because he's down on his phone, didn't look up. We laid on our horns, and he just went right on through. And we literally missed them by inches.
And those are safety issues. But how many times have you tried to engage people in conversations face-to-face, especially younger people, where you're talking to them and they're looking at their phone?
Oh, they're
Can't seem to get eye contact. Or,
like I say, just, you know, drive around and you will see all over the place. I don't care where you go. Any part of the city, you see people out walking or hanging around, they're all buried nose deep into their phone.
It's a new world, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it is. Everybody's buried into it.
All right, thanks.
Well, thanks a lot.
Have fun. Bye-bye. Dave, wasn't it you who took my advice to put a truck horn in your bike?
Oh yeah, I've got the
motorcycle.
Yeah, I wound up getting the air horn. And one of the experiences, I was going up Park Ave, Culver, coming up to Park Ave, and I'm on the bike, and this lady's coming alongside me. I'm ready to make a turn, and she's coming alongside me, and she's just about, you know, I could have knocked on her window. It was that close. So all of a sudden, I hit the air phone because she the horns, because she was looking down at her phone. She all of a sudden threw the phone over to the drive, a passenger side, and wouldn't look at me. And I'm yelling and screaming. I literally kicked the side of her car, telling her get off the GD phone.
She almost turned into you.
Yeah, because she was ready to turn right in. She wasn't paying attention. And there was still a good couple of feet between her and the curb.
Right.
She was literally crowding me out in my lane. And the bike's not that wide.
Right.
Hello?
Right.
Oh, yeah. I loved my air horns. Oh, they woke more people up.
Yeah, I bet.
I had one lady one time. We were on the bike and pulled out in front of us. and I laid on the air horns, it woke this nurse up. Then she got out of it. Oh, I am so sorry. I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. I'll admit it. I wasn't paying attention. Well, hey, wake up, lady. Hey. Yeah, it gets people's
attention.
Yeah, I loved it.
Before we forget, I just want to remind everybody that tomorrow night at 9 p.m., we will be hosting the Soundbites Lounge, courtesy of mastermindlounge.com. And if you go to our homepage at soundbites.org, the top item on the page is a link to that lounge. And the connections comes up at 9 o'clock. It's the second thing now. Top thing is backups. I knew that. The second thing down is Soundbites Lounge, Sundays at 9 p.m. It's a video chat, so you can join us. You are not obligated to turn on your video, of course. Courtesy of Mastermind Lounge, and we'll be there from 9 to 10. And so if you go to soundbites.org/lounge at 9 o'clock, the link will appear magically at 9 o'clock, and you can get in and join us. So
cover everything, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about anything you want to talk about. Some weeks we talk about TV shows. Some of the weeks we talk about movies. Once in a while, we actually talk about computers.
Wow.
It's an astounding
concept.
What a concept. Yeah, but we do it. As always, we just answer the questions that you folks ask. So whatever you want to talk about, we're happy to talk about. Mostly.
Maybe once I retire, I'll be able to get in.
Yeah,
on
that'd be fun. It's what we've essentially replaced Second Life with.
Yeah, is that?
It's still there. It's still going.
Not as much.
It's still very big, except for us. We're not really using it as much anymore. This is much more accessible for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's become the way for a lot of folks nowadays since COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
This is how
people connect, yeah.
Well, I mean, we noticed it just within, as a lot of folks have, you know, in different clubs and organizations have found the value in doing things virtually. You know, the Zoom meetings and all that, all of a sudden, a lot of places are, our attendance is up. Because, you know, some folks, once they get home, they don't feel like getting, you know, changed or, you know, all right, grab a quick bite to eat and then go off to a meeting. Heck, if they're already home and they can pull up to their computer and get in on it from the comforts of their home, you know, grab a cup of coffee or a beverage or something else, sit there and participate in a meeting or a club function and not have to leave your home. You know, that has really boosted a lot of clubs' attendance.
We had a meeting the other day where one of the guys was sitting out on his deck by the lake, which really made the rest of us pretty angry, honestly. We said, next time we're just going to have the meeting on your deck.
30 seconds.
All right, we are going to, we're done for the first hour. But don't go away. We've got a whole other hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side. So take a quick break, but don't forget to come back.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And Dave did get a text message, I guess, from somebody who found his videos, the videos that he was talking about. It's now.
Well, he was talking about horns for a bike. That was the person that texted me.
Oh, but you found somewhere you found the.
But I went and did a search during our break here. You folks, you know, as we've been talking about, you know, the Raspberry Pis and setting them up and the various operating systems and the cooling fans and all this other, where I've learned a lot of this stuff, and you folks can too. There's a gentleman out there, if you go to YouTube, and he goes, his YouTubes are under the name of L-E-E-P S-P Video. That's L-E-E-P S-P Video, all one word. You do search on him. He does intense studies. He's done comparisons on running things off of SD cards, the little micro SD cards. He's compared different brands of micro SD cards. So if you want to run, you know, your Raspberry Pi, whether it's a Pi 3, a 4, you know, or 400, you know, he tells you which ones are better because he's done all these comparisons as far as clock speed and everything else and whether you can overclock them. And he also gets into using the imager. That's how I learned how to also go in now. Instead of booting it off a micro SD, I've got two Raspberry Pi 4s that run off SSD hard drives, and they are fast.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I replaced one of the Raspberry Pi 4s with my old 17-year-old server, which used to have to have...
No, the other way around. You replaced your 17-year-old server with a Raspberry Pi.
I'm dyslexic. What can I say? But yeah, I had it, you know, in this case, and, you know, and it was taking up all the space. Now I've been able to clear that, and where the keyboard and all that sat before for this server, right next to the keyboard is now this little, about the size of a bar of soap, Raspberry Pi 4 running, you know, faster than this server ever thought of running.
Sure, of course.
And it's 2 terabytes. So I took one section, and I'm using that as another backup. Because as we've said, you know, you never have too many backups.
That's right.
So there it is on the shelf, and yeah, I can log into it because it has the HDMI on it. No biggie. Plugged it in. Boom. Up. Running. And it works fantastic.
And I have put a link on our website at soundbites.org. It's titled Raspberry Pi Videos, and it is a link to Leap SP Video or Leap P's. Leaps.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. However, I don't care.
But he gets into more studies and even into the cooling fans that we were talking about and experiments all the time. So you can learn a lot, folks, and he's very good. And he gives you other resources because other folks are always constantly telling him about different updates and how to improve performance and do things better. And that's the beauty of this the Raspberry Pi community, just like Linux and Unix, how people help people out.
Right.
You know, if there's an issue, oh, they fix it right away. Well, this is the same with the Raspberry Pi community. If there's an issue, because I remember on one episode, he's saying, yeah, well, this doesn't quite work right. It wasn't 3 days later, all of a sudden he put out another video. Well, somebody else in the community solved that problem. Didn't last long.
Like, and there are many more. There are many other Raspberry Pi videos up there. So take a look around YouTube in general. There's lots of stuff there. And don't forget, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Google is warning that a bug in its Chrome web browser is actively under attack and is urging users to upgrade to the latest 91.0.4472.101 version to mitigate the issue. In all, Google rolled out fixes for 14 bugs impacting its Windows, Mac, and Linux browsers as part of its June update to the Chrome desktop browser. Google is aware that an exploit for this bug exists in the wild. That exploit is identified as a type confusion bug, within Google's V8 open source JavaScript and WebAssembly engine. The confusion vulnerability is tied to the browser's ActionScript virtual machine. Usually, when a piece of code doesn't verify the type of object that is passed to it, it uses it blindly without type checking, it leads to type confusion. The update coincides with the release of the Android Chrome browser to Chrome 91, that same number, also on Wednesday. While the desktop and mobile versions of the Chrome web browser share the same version number, it's unclear if the updated Android Chrome browser is impacted by the same vulnerabilities. Also unclear is if Microsoft's Edge browser, based on the Chromium open source browser code base, principally developed and maintained by Google, is also impacted. In related news, on Tuesday, Microsoft released a patch for vulnerabilities under active attack, different from the Google one, impacting its Edge browser. That bug is a remote code execution vulnerability within the Edge browser's MSHTML component. The Microsoft HTML component, heaven forbid, they use the worldwide standard, they have to have their own. Microsoft explained the MSHTML browser platform is used by Internet Explorer mode in Microsoft Edge. Remember, Microsoft Edge still runs Internet Explorer mode in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. As well as other applications through web browser control. As part of the June Chrome update, Google patched a critical use after free bug within the browser's optimization engine called BF Cache. This browser component enables back and forward navigation between cached web pages within Chrome. As customary with recently disclosed bugs, Apple did not release the details tied to any of the vulnerabilities patched Wednesday. Access to bug details and links may be kept restricted until the majority of users are updated with a fix. We will also retain restrictions if the bug exists in a third-party library that other projects similarly depend on, but haven't yet fixed, the Google advisory said. Google credits Rong Zhang and Guang Gong of 360 Lab Alpha Lab for finding the BF cache bug in May. For their bug hunting efforts, the pair earned $25,000. Have you updated? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. You can do that just like Richard did from Rochester, New York. Hi, Richard. What's up?
Yeah, I got a question. I have a 2015 MacBook Pro Retina, 13-inch. I bought it used on eBay a while ago. And the battery is really swollen. I'm getting a bulge on the bottom. And I did a little looking online. It looks like it's a fairly involved process to replace the battery.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's something that I dare take on myself. I'm not intimidated by stuff like this.
It is. Okay. First, if it's bulging, don't plug it into anything ever.
Okay.
It definitely is dangerous. Secondly, you really need an insane number of tools.
Special tools.
Special screwdrivers. A Torx T5, a star something thingy something thingy Torx thingy.
And there's also little prize, what they call little pry bars.
Yeah,
they're wedges.
The spoogers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a lot of that stuff from having replaced batteries in my phone, but it, you know.
Yeah, this I wouldn't recommend only because you say it's already bulging.
Yeah.
And if you hit something wrong,
you have a problem.
And it gets all over the components inside there, not knowing what you're doing and what to look for when you're opening it up, because you have obviously not done this before.
Correct.
And whereas if you take it into like a Mac store, they know where certain components are and where they can open things up to not disturb this bulging battery.
Yeah.
And not, you know, safely pull it out and probably remove it and replace it.
Yeah.
And instead of you poking in there and all of a sudden you hit the side of the battery, you know, slip with the wedge, one of those wedgies, and hit the side of the battery, and all of a sudden it starts leaking out.
That's a problem. The other thing, look, we don't want to discourage you from doing your own maintenance.
This I would.
But Macs are basically designed to not let you do your own maintenance.
That
said, there are lots and lots of YouTube videos on taking apart a MacBook Pro 13-inch 215 Retina display system. So just to ease your own mind, feel free to go take a look at all of those. Just do a search for them.
I did, and it was quite a practice. That's why I'm calling you.
That's the point.
Yeah.
I've done older MacBook Pros and I've done iPhones.
Right.
But this is just a whole other world.
This is a little daunting.
Yeah, this is honestly, for the amount of time you're going to spend, the amount of anger you're going to produce, the amount of...
And it, you know, if it was a simple thing of like replacing, say, one of the batteries, you know, just a little simple round battery or something, or, you know, adding memory or something like that, yeah, I'd say go at it. You know, have fun, try it. But when it comes to a battery in acids...
Right.
One, like I say, for your own safety...
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you get anything, you know, on your face or anything else, if it explodes, overheats, and does damage to the device. Whereas if you take it into a professional, have them do it.
Listen, save your money, spend the money, save your blood pressure.
Yeah, no, you got to choose your battles.
Yeah, so exactly.
Anybody you particularly recommend in Rochester?
Well, one of our colleagues.
Yeah, Steve Ray.
Steve Ray works at MacAv.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that sounds good. All right. Well, thanks for saving me from what sounds like a very unpleasant situation.
Well, yeah, like I say, for your own safety, you know, it's, you know, could you probably do it? Yeah, you could, but again, there's that safety factor. That's what I always think about when I had my shop going, you know, folks, well, could I do that? Yeah, you could, but... You know, certain things I recommend doing, then there's others that, no.
Yeah, no, I agree. You got to look at the downside.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to save a little money, but probably...
pound foolish and what do they say? Pound?
Yeah.
Pennywise and pound foolish.
Yeah, pennywise and pound foolish.
Thank you very much.
All right, Richard, have fun.
Stay safe. Bye.
But yeah, we recommend that anybody who is thinking of doing their own tech work, the beauty of YouTube is that there are so many take it apart, fix it, put it back together videos. Before you do anything, watch a couple of dozen of those. Because believe me when I tell you there's, for every solution, there's a couple of dozen entirely different videos on it. So watch a bunch of those. And then decide if whatever the cost is, and you can find that out just by calling someone and asking them, any of the vendors, whether the cost is worth the time and aggravation and buying
and
all
your
new
own safety
screwdrivers and for certain things, your own safety. You know, when you're talking about changing a battery, I say go for it. When you're talking about changing a bulging battery, I say let a professional do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dangerous thing.
Especially if you've not gone in there. The laptops and that, you know, opening them up, they just don't, you know, it's not like a desktop unit where you hit a couple, you know, you do a couple screws on the side and all of a sudden this cover pulls off and there you are. You're looking at all the components. A laptop is totally different.
Right.
You've got to start removing all these different screws. And then, like you say, there's the diamond ones and there's the hex ones. And you got to use the right ones or you're going to strip them. And you got to keep track of where you're taking them out of because there's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them.
And then once you get them all out, it just doesn't all of a sudden pop open. You have to have these other little, like, wedgies type of things is the best way I describe them. And go.
I believe the technical term is spoogers.
Spoogers, I believe you. And go along the edge and loosen up the case. And you got to know where to start and how much of pressure to apply, because you know you could do some damage.
Maybe it's not what they're called.
You could do some damage. You know, if you all of a sudden shove one of them in there too far, and all of a sudden hit some other components. Because you don't know what's underneath there and where they reside. There's a lot of surface-mounted stuff there. And you could do further damage.
Right. Yeah, so I would definitely suggest that you take a look at all of those videos. Because, honestly, some of you will be highly encouraged. More of you will be highly discouraged. That's just the way that works. You know, and the same is true of any device. There's lots of stuff up there for the various phones that are out there and for laptops and desktops. And make sure you get the right model and all of that nonsense. And as Dave was saying, there's lots and lots and lots of them on various Raspberry Pi components. There's one guy who has an entire series on different cases.
Yeah.
For the Raspberry Pi. And there's another one that has, you know, how to overclock your Raspberry Pi. Although why you would need to, I'm sure I don't know, but okay. If you're the sort of person who is a high-end gamer or a high-end video user, editor, that sort of fare, then a Raspberry Pi certainly is not for you. But if you're somebody who's looking to augment their current stuff or perhaps replace an aging desktop with another machine, absolutely take a look at a Raspberry Pi. Whether you whatever operating system you use, I'm personally using Raspbian right now. Dave likes Twister. But whatever operating system you use, you can find YouTube videos on how to install it, how to configure it, and the cool things that you can do with it. So take a look at all of those. YouTube is quite a resource. And, yeah, you will... You will definitely fall down the rabbit hole. There is no question of that.
Somebody, it's got a good question here. What do you do for antivirus software for on a Raspberry Pi? As it stands right now, there's really not an issue because it is sort of the
yeah,
Linux.
There is. Hold on. There is, but Raspberry Pis run Linux.
Yeah.
And so Clam, as Dave said, there's less of an issue with Raspberry Pis.
I won't say nothing is any right, operating right. system is not foolproof.
Right. But you can run, that's all right. You can run Clam AV, C-L-A-M-A-V. And the Clam antivirus suite does a great job of keeping the machines clean and nice. I recommend a combination of Rootkit Hunter and Clam AV.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're not a high target. I mean, I'd be more concerned if I was running a Windows machine or a Mac. Because people that write viruses and all that type of stuff and spyware and all that, they're going after what the majority of folks are running. Right. And right now, for the majority, it's either Mac or PC. That's where, you know, they're going to get their billions of email addresses and everything else. Sniffing out for a Raspberry Pi and that. Yeah. I'm not saying
said,
again.
Right.
But still, that said, you don't want to not have anything.
Right. Because the many of these things are automated and they'll look around a Raspberry Pi as readily as they'll look around a Windows machine.
Yep.
But the Raspberry Pi antivirus that you can just install, there's a system called apt, and it is the application programming kit that comes with many versions of Linux, and you can install so many programs through it. There's a software center if you're running, depending on which operating system you're running and how you run it, there's often what's called a software center where you can open it up and look through quite literally tens of thousands of programs and find something that'll make you happy. So if you were to open up the software center on a Raspberry Pi and search for antivirus, you'd see all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And again, if you're running a Raspberry Pi Zero or even up to a 2, I might not suggest running an antivirus program because it's just going to bog it down. But when you get up into the 3s and the 4s and the 400s, yeah, absolutely, you can run it. It's a desktop, so you can run it just as easily as you can run everything else, and it's not a problem, and you'll find that... if nothing else, peace of mind, right? So, yeah. And particularly if you're using a Raspberry Pi for a backup system. Of course you want to be running an antivirus on it, because just in case your main antivirus on your main system misses something, the likelihood is high that the Raspberry Pi antivirus, the Clam AV or whatever, will catch it. So, yeah, certainly it doesn't hurt to do it. All right, let's get to back to the phones. Our next caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. Hi, Joel. What's up?
Hi, guys. I wanted to follow up on the call that you had with the guy with the swollen battery.
Yeah.
And, you know, from everything I've read, swollen lithium-ion batteries are fire hazards.
Yeah.
They're swelling because of internally generated heat.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
And the deal is, if that case cracks and the lithium gets exposed to air, lithium will spontaneously set itself on fire.
Yeah, that's why I was telling him, you know, don't do it, because
don't
he
touch it, don't keep it plugged in, to get it right to a vendor immediately.
Because if he's trying to poke around the case and, you know, slipping screwdrivers or whatever in there to open up that case, and he, like you said, accidentally hits it and opens it up to air, he could wind up with bigger issues.
I agree. One other thing is that if it were mine, I would get it out of my house.
Yeah, I wouldn't stick it in the...
It's a progressive issue.
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly right. So definitely unplug it. Take it immediately to somebody.
Get it inside of a metal bucket somewhere where it can't ignite anything else.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
You know, the other thing I'd like to throw in is for repairs that are not so dangerous, I've done a number of things where I've used iFixit for the parts.
Right.
And they send you all the tools and beautiful instructions.
Right.
I don't advise doing it on this one, though.
No. Like we said, pick your battles. Yeah.
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 As Richard said.
I wanted to emphasize the fire hazard there.
Yep.
Right.
Because it really is a serious issue.
Excellent point, Joel.
Appreciate all you do.
Thank you. That's an excellent point. Like we said, he's right. We did not emphasize that enough. A bulging battery is, in fact, actively dangerous.
Yeah.
Make sure it is thoroughly unplugged and keep it somewhere that if it does suddenly spontaneously combust, it's not going to set your house on fire. So,
like you said,
stick it in a metal bucket.
Yeah, if you got a metal bucket, you know, take it outside, put it in the garage or someplace where it's safe, away from other items, in a metal container that, you know, if it does overheat or do anything, it's not going to cause a fire around the house.
But MacAv is open right now. He could quite easily take it there and get it dealt with.
Take care of it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes. With Dave Enright, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We'll see you on the other side with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
For that, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
Dave Enright. I got to have a little fun.
Yep, and that's very little fun. 36 minutes after the hour, and we are soundbites. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Well, hackers have stolen 26 million user logins for tech giants, including Amazon, Apple, and Facebook, as well as vital payment information in the latest online security breach. The malware hack exposed by cybersecurity provider NordLocker also saw payment details nabbed from 3.25 million computers that run Windows software. It was uncovered after researchers discovered a 1.2 terabyte database. Terabyte database filled with stolen personal information. The other firms whose accounts were targeted include eBay, Instagram, Netflix, PayPal, Roblox, Steam, Twitch, and Twitter. It saw victims' computers infected by opening emails or downloading bootleg software, and enabled the malware to take screenshots of their browsing activity, including private login details. According to a report released by NordLocker on Wednesday, an unidentified Trojan-type malware stole the files, including 26 million login credentials between 2018 and 2020. It saw victims' webcams taken over by the malware, which then took screenshots as people used their computers to reveal personal information. It remains unclear if any of those data were then used to scam or defraud its rightful owners. People who fear they may have been targeted can visit the website Have I Been Pwned, P-W-N-E-D, and insert their details to find out. The news comes amid a spike in cybersecurity and ransomware attacks affecting major American companies. One that crippled a key pipeline along the East Coast, affecting gasoline supplies and leading to shortages at filling stations. Another shut down beef plants of the world's largest meat producer. As for NordLocker and the huge cache of stolen data it found, the company said, "We want to make it clear. We did not purchase this database, nor do we condone other parties doing so." A hacker group revealed the data location accidentally. The mystery malware that stole information from over 3 million PCs has not been identified, and its reasons for existing are unknown. NordLocker found that the malware was transmitted through email and illegal software, including bootleg versions of Adobe Photoshop 2018 and a number of computer games. So if you did not pay for your copy of Adobe Photoshop 2018, you may have been pwned. The stolen data included 26 million sets of login credentials for most common online services, 2 billion session cookies or online footprints that hackers use to view their targets' behavior and habits on their computers, and 6.6 million desktop files, including 1 million images and 650,000 Word and PDF files. So have you been pwned? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Ed did from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. I wanted to ask you a question that's really kind of strange. I hear my echo. I don't have my speaker on. I hear myself with you.
Yeah.
I sent an email to some bank. You know, you could email the president if you don't have a problem, blah, blah, blah. It was a regular email address. So I did, and I got a weird text back. It says something to the effect that we received your message. Let me read it to you because it's really strange. And it says, oops, I just lost the darn thing. But anyway, essentially it said, change your SMS URL to send this message. Thank you, reply, help. Blah, blah, blah. And then it was, I don't have a clue what they're talking about. I thought an email was an email and then a text was a text.
Yes, yes. They are entirely different. SMS mm-hmm. is essentially a text message, a phone text message. That's what SMS is, short message service. And it sends short messages or text messages over your phone network. Email is an entirely different beast. And if you, I don't know where you got that bank email address, but it sounds to me like a spam provider.
Mm-hmm.
So I would.
Well, I got it off their website. It was for a Citizen Bank, actually. And I scrolled through to find out who was the boss, and they gave me the name. And then they had any problems, email CEO, what is that, John Smith or something like that, at citizensbank.com. And I tried that, and as I said, I got an answer back on my text. I said, what is all this about? Let me see if I can get it. I didn't want to get the right wording for you. Yeah, because it essentially said that, I don't know where you see here. I'm going to go back. No, I can't do it.
Yeah, don't worry about it. The point is, if they've either got an issue there of their own, somebody fumble-fingered something badly, somebody's hijacked and spoofed his stuff. So in any case, do not do what it says to do.
Safest thing to do, especially when it comes to banking, instead of texting them or emailing them, you pick up that thing called, a phone, and actually call an individual at a bank, talk to a live person.
And make sure you get the bank off the phone number off the legitimate bank website.
Or you can just do
or from your
Google. You know, you can sit there. And
well, I wouldn't trust, depending on.
Well, you can look up the phone numbers. Usually, say you're looking for Citibank. You can do a search on Google for Citibank here in Rochester and find, you know, a phone number of a local branch. And they should be able, if they can't answer it, connect you to somebody else that can.
Even safer is to print out that email and take it to the bank and ask them.
Even better.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I just made a screenshot.
Yeah. Or print the email. It's an email. You can print it.
Yeah, but I mean, does it even sound legitimate where you can change an email that you sent to a URL SMS? How could you do that? That doesn't make any sense.
You can because most phone providers have what they call an email gateway to text messaging, to SMS.
I see.
So, for example, if you are a Verizon customer, your gateway, your email gateway, is your phone number, including the area code, and I think the one, but I don't remember that, at vtext.com, V for Verizon. Mm-hmm. So if you knew my phone number, you could text me at my phone number at vtext.com if I were a Verizon customer.
That gateway first, though, correct?
Well, that's just you're sending a regular email to someone's
text message
as a text message to their phone.
I gotcha. Okay. That I didn't know you could do. Okay.
Yeah. And it depends. Okay. A couple of things about that. Not every, I remember Verizon's because I just did that to somebody the other day. And Sprint is Sprint. I forget what it is for Sprint. But in general, that's the way those work. The problem with them is that, as I'm sure you know, text messaging is the lowest priority thing on any network.
Right.
Although it isn't, because what's lower is the text to message, the email gateway is even lower. I sent a message to a guy. He didn't get it for an hour and a half. Luckily, it wasn't time sensitive. But it took an hour and a half to get to him. And that's simply because Verizon doesn't care. Most of the providers don't care. It's the lowest priority item on their list, and they only send it when they feel like it.
Interesting. Okay, I will, unless, as you say, somebody got in there to divert that, then any more, you can't trust anything, I guess.
Pretty much.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ed. You can send text messages via email gateways. And
it's highly unusual, you know, though, that a bank would ask somebody to do something that weird, because not everybody's tech savvy and knowing how to do something like that, where it's just a lot simpler. Like you say, print that email off, go to a local branch of the bank and say, hey, I got this. What's up? Talk to somebody live. You can get straight answers. And, you know, because nowadays, you know, we've heard it constantly on this show. Well, it looked official. You know, it had all these watermarks on it. Yeah, they've gotten better at spoofing you.
Right.
They have gotten a lot smarter. You would have sworn up and down that you went to the official bank website. Did you check the URL? Huh?
Yeah.
What do you mean? You just look at the page. You don't pay attention to the URL, whether there's a lock on it or something, and it's a safe site. You know, like I say, if you have to, and this is, I've been saying this for decades. If you have to stop and think about something that you got in an email or to a website, stop right there. pick up that thing called a phone and call and talk to somebody that is legit, especially when it comes to your banking or any of your other accounts. I don't care whether it's utilities or anything else. You pick up the phone and call an individual at that particular company. You can still look up corporations and everything else legally and talk to somebody and get an answer. Don't rely on the internet. Well, it said that this was... No.
Yeah, no, I don't trust it.
Don't, because they can trick you constant. That's their whole goal, is to make you so confident that, oh, yeah, and you go ahead and do it, and then you've been had. And you could be out hundreds of dollars. And granted, sometimes a lot of banks and everything else are great about getting your money back, but that can also take time. You know, it's not instantaneously. They've got to do, you know, checking into things and everything else to verify stuff.
Right.
Because as we've said, sometimes you can go in there and agree to something that you didn't realize that you were agreeing to, and they come back and say, oh, no, we got it. They said, yeah, it's okay to. And you don't remember doing that.
Yeah, right. And if you want to know more about email gateway lists, you can search SMS gateway in Wikipedia, or of course, just Google email gateway list, and you'll see the list, Verizon, US Cellular, T-Mobile, Sprint, Google Fi, Cricket, Boost. They all have them. And if you're in Canada, Bell Canada, Fido Solutions, PC Mobile, Rogers Communication, they all have them. So even Sasktel Network has them. So if you can, you can certainly find a way to email to a cell phone. But you are still at that point, because you're really sending an SMS, you're really still limited to 160 characters.
Yeah.
And that includes the subject line, by the way. So be aware that all the same limitations apply, plus the added limitation of, you know, it's definitely women and children first. It is the least important thing that they're going to do in a day. So it can take a very long time for that message to get to you. I was testing that at Mastermind Lounge the other day. We now use Twilio because we were using gateways.
Mm-hmm.
To send messages to people, but it's just not timely. You know, when somebody's got an upcoming session, you can, we send you a message reminding you. Yeah. The problem is SMS gateways are just not reliable in a time sensitive application. So we're now using Twilio, which is amazingly simple and great. But I tested it, with a couple of people in the executive committee and with myself. With me too. I sent the same message identically at the same time to the same people. In one, I sent it as a text message through Twilio, and the other is I sent it as an email message to the SMS gateway.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple people got it within seconds, and other people it took hours. Hours.
Wow.
To get to them. And it depended on what carrier they were using. So be aware that while it is useful, it is not time sensitive. So I mail myself a quote of the day a couple of times a day. I text message it to myself through the email gateway. And sometimes it shows up at 8 o'clock, and sometimes it shows up at 8:30, and sometimes it shows up at 9:30. And that's okay. It's a thing I'm doing. And I don't care. But don't expect to use an email gateway for any time sensitive information.
One other thing I'd like to talk about, though, and talk about, you know, taking time and everything else, is the big scam going on right now is a lot of folks are seeing, you know, if you're on the internet and say through Facebook or anything else like that, ordering stuff. You're seeing these other companies pop up, you know, for whether it's, I'll use this one example because this one person wound up getting stung. They saw these shoes that they wanted to order. And they went ahead and ordered them. And I said, well, did you check it out? Well, no, it said, you know, that all these satisfied customers and everything else. And
it was on Facebook.
Yeah, and they were in there, and they were only $80. They were on sale in that. Okay. And a couple months go by, and I said, so how'd they work out? I didn't. What happened? I've sent them countless emails. They're not replying and everything else. And turns out this was some other company off in wherever. And they sit there and promise, oh, well, yeah, it's taking a while, blaming this and that. And then all of a sudden they stop answering them. So again, folks, when you go and order stuff and everything else, check out, you know, where you're ordering it. Where is this place? You know, just don't go ahead and order. See if there's a viable address, a phone number in there, in case you can get a hold of them. Try calling it just to see before you place the order whether somebody actually answers. And that, because there are so many scams out there right now, and there's small ones. You know, I mean, this one person wound up getting nailed for some shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard folks ordering clothing and everything else from this other stuff. Oh, it's a great deal, you know, or this item or that item. Order one, you get the second one for, you know, real pulling people in. And they're scams. They take the money and they run.
Right. Work with well-established companies. And if the only place you can find ads for them is on Facebook, it's unlikely they're real.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the buyer beware. I don't like ordering anything there. No, I'll go to Amazon or I'll do everything through PayPal because they protect you too.
Yep.
You know, they'll go after them if you try to get scammed there. So actually go to actual sites. Don't do this stuff on Facebook because there's so many of them. There are pop-ups that they just put up there, scam people, and then they're gone.
Right. Right. And one of the things that I always look for is if they take PayPal.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they don't, then you know something might be a little hinky.
Yeah.
Now, PayPal takes a percentage, and there are people who don't want to pay the percentage. Okay, I absolutely get that. But the fact that PayPal fights for you and gets your money back makes me happy. So if I have a choice of two places and one takes PayPal, I go there.
Yeah, versus being out all that money.
Right.
I don't care whether it's $20 or whatever. It's still money, you know. And
I discovered the other day, and I don't remember doing this. I think it was magic, but I pay with my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered that I have a PayPal credit card on my phone.
Yeah.
It's not a credit card. It's a debit card.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just didn't remember putting it on because it's quarantine and who the hell knows what I do at 2 in the morning anymore. But I started paying for stuff with my PayPal account and I much prefer it.
Oh, I had a guy I had an antenna that I was putting up for sale. And he goes, how am I gonna, I said, hit me with PayPal, you know, send me half of it and I'll get it out and I'll send you and then the rest of it. You know, honor system, but we did it that way, and it was great. Boom. And I didn't have to worry. He didn't have to worry, and we were both protected.
Yep.
And he got it, and he was happier than a pig of mud, and I got my money for the antenna. So it was a win-win.
I do Ask Nick if you want to become a member of Ask Nick, and you really do want to become a member of Ask Nick. You know you do. I do it through PayPal because you're protected. I'd be protected anyway. I lose what? One email? You don't pay, and I send you an email, and then I take you off the list. Big deal. But you're protected. If you don't get my emails or you decide you want your money back and I don't give it to you, I would, of course.
Yeah.
But if I didn't, you're protected. That's why I use PayPal.
There's a number of folks that wouldn't be as honest.
Right. Well, that's neither here. My point is that I use PayPal because you're protected.
Yeah. Well, it's a win-win.
There's
a 100
I could use. I was using Stripe for a while to do things, but they don't give you the protect. They don't give the other person, the buyer,
you're being the protection that PayPal person does. Protecting both ways.
Right.
Yep.
That's the reason I've had people who ask me, you know, why do you use PayPal? I want to send you a check or whatever. you know what? You're not protected if you send me a check.
No, PayPal's so easy.
I'm flattered and honored, but PayPal.
PayPal looks out for you and, you know, protects you, like you say, from scams, because too many folks, just like we've said before, you know, get click happy. They don't always read stuff, and they're, you know, oh, yeah, I want this, and go ahead and do it. And then all of a sudden they've been taken, you know, for a couple $100 because they fell for a scam.
Yep.
And that's becoming more and more prevalent than viruses and everything else out there right nowadays, because they're overseas and they're looking for ways to scam people any which way loose they can.
And we're already seeing scams for Halloween and for Christmas already.
Mm-hmm.
That's just astounding to me, but there it is. And we have to remind you, be safe out there. When you pay with something like PayPal, and many credit cards now do that same kind of protection, find out from your bank if yours does. You can protect yourself against those kind of scams, but you want to be more wary than ever. Frankly, you know, the closer we get to Christmas,
yeah,
the more wary you have to be. It's a fact of life, and I hate to say it, but it's true. Be aware, be safe, and make sure that the people you're talking to are indeed the people you think you're talking to. So that's
Yeah, because there's, unfortunately, you know, we've become relying on it, and they're taking advantage of that.
What we see a lot are my friends who are of a more conservative bent. Many of them bought merchandise from the internet, particularly red hats and other things like it, that simply they never received because people took advantage of the scam, and it makes me sad. So be aware, be careful. That's it. We are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright for being here. I want to thank Steve Ray for not being here. I know he's listening. He's laughing right now. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You've just wasted 2 hours of your life listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Sound Bites.
Steve who?
Steve, yeah, exactly. It's Sound Bites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We are done for another week. Be good to each other. We will see you in 166 hours.